Parental love, romantic love, affection between friends, specify.
Romantic love.
An attraction based on sexual desire, one that facilitates procreation.
I guess I'm asking the wrong person.
Not at all. Borg have referenced this condition in over 6,000 assimilated species.
Condition? You make it sound like a disease.
Physiologically, it bears a striking similarity to disease. A series of biochemical responses that trigger an emotional cascade, impairing normal functioning.
Forget it.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, searching for love in the final frontier.
And now for this week's conundrum, this special Valentine's Day conundrum... Flings of the week.
Yeah, best and worst flings, in fact, Cameron. So when we think about flings of the week...
what do we think about?
I think about this a lot. But when it comes to Star Trek, when we're talking about the parameters of this episode, though, I don't think we can exclude or include somebody like, say, Cassidy Yates.
Right.
Or, say, Vash, because Vash appears multiple times. She's kind of an ongoing presence. But there's other characters that... I'm looking at you, Commander Riker. You get around, and there's romances that turn out quite well, and there's flings that fizzle out within 2 minutes of on-screen zero chemistry between the characters.
Well, exactly. I mean, Star Trek, at least in the earlier seasons, was very episodic, so the idea of introducing a romantic interest every week was a good idea to a TV writer. And sometimes you had dynamic episodes, like the ones we'll talk about in this episode, and sometimes you had horrible ones, also like ones we'll talk about in this episode. We're going to have the best and the worst, you know, the highs and the lows of Star Trek Forbidden Love.
Yeah, I think we'll also have a good mix of different series. But I will say that at least my picks a little heavily weighted in favor of one series where both really good and really bad examples
here. Well, that's good, because I'm kind of a little more diverse, I think. So that way we can kind of cover the spectrum of Star Trek passion.
Okay, well, Cam, let's get to it. What's our first fling?
I think, why don't we just get the most obvious one out of the way and talk about it, because we have to. And then we can kind of get to the more obscure, the more off the wall.
Okay.
Let's talk about City on the Edge of Forever.
I knew you were going to go there.
You have to. Like, it's an episode we've talked a lot about in the past, the romance with Edith Keeler. But... if you're going to do the best Star Trek, one-episode flings, is there a better one?
Mm-mm.
No, I mean, Joan Collins is, like, luminous in this episode. I think it's Kirk's greatest love affair. All the more insulting that Antonia wound up in Generations.
Oh. Cam, that centaur, I'm never going to get over it.
Neither will he.
And for those who don't know the centaur reference, go back to our Star Trek Generations review episode. That was bonus episode number 7 way back in the day. That was probably like 2015 or something.
So, oh, yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, with Edith Keeler, though, here's the thing. When I'm going through all of these flings / romances, such as dalliances or what have you, I'm thinking, do I buy these characters as a couple?
Right.
How long did it take you to, between the time Edith Keeler was introduced and Kirk met her, how long did it take for you to buy them as a potential couple?
Not long at all. And it's really remarkable because they don't meet that quickly in the episode. Like, it's very limited screen time that these two characters are together. But there is more romance and more emotion tied to their, union than in movies, we see that are double the length or even three times.
So, Cam, do you think it was right there on the page, or do you think that Kirk, or I should say Shatner, had, like, instant chemistry with
Joan Collins,
With Joan Collins.
I think it was seriously strong chemistry right off the bat.
Yeah.
Because I think you could write the dialogue just as well as it was, but it just is dynamite with these two. They just play off each other so well. And we've talked in the past about how we always had an issue with Star Trek's, how they really enjoyed sending crew members into romantic quests with, like, primitive men or women.
Yes, where the primitive people had a lot to learn from the very futuristic man.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
yeah.
Really?
And it works here. Like, why does Edith Keeler work? You know, she's from 1930s America.
Okay. Well, you know what? She had a very idealistic look at the universe. And mm-hmm. I think that falls in line with the way Kirk views the universe as
and
well.
And Gene Roddenberry.
And Gene Roddenberry. What a coincidence, you know? So I think that if they're on the same page philosophically, it doesn't feel as icky as some of those other time travel romances that we've encountered or what have you. What do you think it works?
I think there's something about Edith, like, she has a certain innocence to her because she doesn't have kind of the advantage that he has of knowing the history,
yep.
you know, and everything's to come, but she feels like such a strong, dynamic, and well-written character unto herself that she, like, stands on equal footing with him, despite the fact that he has a huge advantage of knowing the future, essentially, that she's going to be living. And she never feels like, and it would be so easy to write her as essentially a simpleton. And she does never.
If I was
never
ever portrayed on screen, I would. It'd be very easy to portray me as a simpleton.
You'd be like Simple Jack from from Tropic Thunder. Exactly.
Thanks, Cam.
But no, I mean, she never feels at a disadvantage with Kirk.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and that's something that happens in a lot of those episodes where it's like sort of a primitive person is they're kind of talking down to them.
Well, it's like, hey, I know everything. Just listen to me.
Yeah.
Mansplaining to the nth degree.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a great iconic moment where they're just walking along the street, you know, they're pointing up at the stars. I mean, that romance really has all the huge iconic moments you would ever hope for compacted into, like, I don't know what, like maybe 20 minutes of screen time together?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Okay, so it's a fling of the week, Cam.
It is.
And, you know, but there's like this kind of sense of almost destiny that they are meant to be together. That's it's more than just a dalliance, right?
Oh, yeah. And do you think it kind of hurt Kirk in the sense that this romance lands right in episode one? And I don't know
Wait,
that they were...
What do you mean by episode one?
Oh, sorry, in season one of the of original series. And so going forward, they were never able to capture that again. I don't think with any Kirk romance across the entire series, it almost kind of stings that it happened so early. You know, had it happened in like season three or something, or maybe the first movie.
You know, it's the way Picard felt in We'll Always Have Paris.
Obviously.
Yeah.
An episode we're going to get to later when we talk about the best of.
Okay. Do you want to excise my last comment? But, okay. So, obviously, this tragic romance / fling, we both agree this works.
Yeah, and they would try and replicate it again and again with tragic Kirk romances. None of them stuck like this one. This one actually, like, it hurts at the end. You know, when Kirk, you know, stops McCoy from saving her and just... This has that line where, you know, they come back to their own time and he says, like, let's get the hell out of here. And it's so heavy and just dark. And it's a really uplifting, fun episode until that point. And then it just ends on such a downer note. And, like, the tonal shift would be really jarring in a badly written episode. But it's so strong. And we walk out just mourning this what could have been with this relationship. And Edith sticks, I think, with the series throughout. Like... The fact that this character is on screen for however 20 minutes or something in the original series, her legacy is huge.
Yeah. Well, Cam, I'm going to jump over to one of my picks of a fling that works for me.
We'll Always Have Paris?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know it. But before we get to We'll Always Have Paris, I want to touch upon one of my favorites and one of the lesser known ones, even though I think I never hear fans say anything bad about this one. I know you're a fan of this. Lessons, the season six episode featuring Picard and one Lieutenant Commander Darren.
Yeah, this was on my list too.
Okay.
I have an alternate, so don't worry.
No, I've got alternates as well, because there might be, you know, some crossover between you and I. But essentially, this is the one where a new head of stellar cartography joins the Enterprise D. Picard is just, like, smitten by this woman, and eventually it ends with him having to send her onto a very dangerous away mission. Very few survivors come back. He's pretty much convinced she's gone until she transports back to the ship at the last minute, and they decide, I just can't do this. You know, I'm going to be, you know, compromising both my feelings for you and my integrity as a commander if I can never send you on a dangerous away mission, which I have to do as a commander. I totally buy these two as a couple. They have chemistry, and it's not that whole, because too much of what we see here in a lot of these flings is just a lot of mansplaining to do.
Right.
It feels like they're totally equals here.
or not just mansplaining, but there's also kind of an air of perviness to it.
Sure.
Like they're really macking on them hard, or, you know, it just feels a little cheeseball.
Yes.
This is a very adult relationship on Star Trek, I really appreciated.
There's not like a 30-year age gap between the two either, which I very much appreciate.
And there's something really beautiful about it in the sense that Picard is a character who's very repressed and very, you know, it's talked about in the episode how he's kind of isolated and how he communicates and opens up to her through music. And I think that is one of the genius touches of this episode. One of the probably the greatest episode of it is when they're playing that music from The Inner Light. And that could have been such a cheap gimmick. The idea of using iconic music to try and sell, you know, emotions of a scene by, you know, reflecting back on a episode that fans love. Like, think of like Jurassic World, which, you know, plays the Jurassic Park theme that people love ad nauseum to try and convince you that you're watching something equally wondrous. Had this episode failed and been bad, the music would have been really egregious. It's a miracle that they managed to not only like take an iconic piece of music and reuse it, but also kind of recontextualize it and add to it in a way that I think gives it even a bigger impact.
Yeah, I think if it was a bad episode, then I think that would have actually diminished the legacy of The Inner Light as well.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Picard more vulnerable than at that moment that he decided to share with Lieutenant Commander Darren his own experience on that planet from The Inner Light? You know?
No, not at all. And I think what I like about this character, of the Darren character, is that she feels like a character that Picard would mesh well with. Like, I know a lot of fans really like Vash, especially because Captain's Holiday is a really fun episode.
Yeah.
But I don't buy the idea that Picard would consider any sort of future with Vash.
No.
Versus this woman is, I think, perfect for him.
He could totally picture himself settling down with her. And I do like the fact that it's not a woman who instantly finds herself enamored with like the brilliance that is Jean-Luc Picard. Like, she pushes back against him. I love their introduction to her where he opens the door and she's like, get in or get out.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, okay.
She's very season one Picard.
But that's just it. Like, she has like some, she actually has a personality. And,
yes.
And when we go into some of the flings that don't work, I think one of the things that we'll note here is that a lot of these romances, one person or perhaps even both people in this coupling don't have a personality.
Right. No, I agree 100%. And Wendy Hughes is the actress who played this character, and she actually died 2 years, or I guess 3 years ago now, of cancer.
I have no idea.
Which is very sad, but she was only 61, I think, when she passed.
Wow.
But, you know, in one episode, she becomes a character that really lingers in my memory, at least when I think about Picard love interest. She's my favorite by quite a margin.
Well, you know, yes. I'll say this. She is my favorite, period.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I have her at the top as a fling, because he doesn't really have any recurring love interest unless you want to count Laxana Troi.
I mean,
or
Vash shows up in multiple episodes, but yeah, it's really just the one.
But what about this? I'll propose this to you. I remember the carousel scene in Star Trek Generations.
Sure.
You have some random woman, like, having a home with Picard.
Antonia's sister.
Yeah. Some random, very random situation in which they're all dressed up as if it's, like, the 19th century.
Yeah.
He's a Frenchman who, he's pretending he's British for some reason.
Why did they not cast Wendy Hughes in that role?
I have no idea.
Because you lose nothing. Non-fans don't care. You know, it's not like they're going to name her and start talking about stellar cartography.
Yeah.
It's like the Antonia thing. You lose nothing by just throwing in a name there.
Does she have a real expensive, like, payday coming to her? Was she going to be demanding, like, millions upon millions?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
The one moment I was a little iffy on in this episode, I'm curious what you thought, was there's a point where she's talking to Crusher about Picard's music, and Crusher comes off as jealous, and I didn't know how I felt about that.
Yeah, okay, but, and this is why I think the Picard-Crusher kind of potential romantic couple, it's always been fascinating to me, because you always get the sense that there's kind of this romantic tension between the two of them, but you just don't ever go there.
Yeah.
And I can get that sense from Crusher. I was okay with it. Like, it felt almost to me uncomfortable to watch, because Darren has no idea, like, how, you know, their history between Crusher and Picard, and she's just talking to somebody who she feels she can confide in. Mere moments ago, Crusher was saying, oh, I like that Lieutenant Commander Darren.
Yeah.
You know, so why not? But I don't know. To me, I understand where Beverly's coming from.
I guess I'm a little spoiled in the sense that the Deanna Troi Riker thing feels a little more healthy and mature, where they're, you know, kind of happy for one another. Yeah. You know, they still like each other, but they also consider themselves friends. And, you know, we see that Picard and Crusher are still friends. You know, they're having dinner in the episode or whatever. So I don't mind, I guess, the sense that maybe Crusher is a little bit kind of like, oh, but it's actually so visibly displays it.
Sure.
That I find a little bit, I don't know, off-putting.
Okay, but the big difference here, though, is that Riker and Troy, they were a couple at one point.
Right.
You know what? I know they heavily hinted that maybe Wes was Picard's son, and then they completely dropped that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. In your own mind, do you picture Picard and Crusher at one time being together?
I mean, the episode Attached does a really good job of convincing me that it would have worked.
Yeah.
And I guess they were together in an alternate future, possibly, all good things.
Yeah.
But through the series, no, not really.
But what about prior to Encounter at Farpoint? Because they were hinting at that. Do you think that maybe something maybe happened right around the time she was seeing Jack Crusher or something?
I never really felt like anything happened.
No?
Maybe there was some attraction, but I never really got the sense that there was, you know, any fling of the week.
Yeah. And I think at this point, I think it's very, very safe to say that Wesley Crusher is Jack Crusher's son.
Unfortunately for Jack, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
This episode raised one question I was curious to you. Because we see with a lot of the captains, they have these romances of the week, but duty is ultimately what fulfills them. You know, we see this with Kirk. I don't think there's ever a sense that Kirk feels alone, you know, just being the captain of a starship. Picard, when this episode ends, I'm like, is Picard really happy?
I think it's clear that he sacrificed something big in his life to be this captain.
Yeah, because Kirk always seemed happy to me. He's still that Peter Pan complex, you know, second star to the right, straight on till morning.
I think Kirk was happy to have a fling of the week and move on. Yeah, he was torn up about Edith Keeler. No woman would ever match except for Antonia.
Yeah.
And that was that. You know, he's content with his life. I think Picard, just based on everything we've seen from him, think about his experience in Inner Light, you know, where he had that family and that was something that satisfied him, you know, and I totally buy it. Like Picard, there's going to be something missing for him as long as he doesn't have a family.
Right. And I considered actually having the wife from the Inner Light in this, you know, to be one of my picks, but I just realized her character didn't strike me as dynamic enough to include.
I did actually have that as a potential pick for mine. And then I realized, like, the story it didn't revolve so much about their fling of the week, you know? And
right.
It was, and I didn't consider that a fling either.
True.
They were married for, what, 45 years or so?
About that.
So.
It was a long-term fling.
Oh, yeah. But, Cam, why don't we go to you? Let's get into people. We'll have a little bit more fun. Why don't you tell me about a fling that doesn't work? Because I hope you don't take my number one pick, but you go ahead, sir.
Okay, well, let's talk about an episode called The Disease.
Okay. You know, I thought you might pick this one, so I actually watched it for the first time in about like 15 years in anticipation of this. But again, remind listeners who don't rewatch this one at least once a week what this is about, Cam.
Right, so this is an episode where Harry Kim is having a fling with a woman named Darren Tao, who's a member of the Vero people. They're a sort of a xenophobic race that have this generational ship that's going through space. It's having problems, so it requires Voyager to help it. And this alien, the Varro, they don't want outsiders involved, but Harry Kim and this woman, Tao, they hit it off big time. And it's like steamy trysts right off the top.
Oh, not only steamy, Cam, bioluminescence with the skin.
Yeah, they basically have a biological link between the two of them. And it causes Harry Kim to go a little crazy with love and have some incredibly awkward encounters with Janeway.
Okay, and I think there's a big thing that we should address with this one. But when you look at...
Just one?
Okay. But I think the biggest thing, and I don't know how aware people were of it at the time, but if you look at Hollywood, leading men, especially like leading Asian men, not a whole lot. And I think one of the big threads that we see throughout Hollywood is like Asian men are portrayed as very non-sexual, emasculate a lot of the time. And you have an entire episode dedicated to Harry Kim's sex life.
Yes.
And he is so uncomfortable with it. It is.
Yeah.
It's so... this episode has not aged well when you think about like the few strides Hollywood's made when it comes to portraying Asian men as leading men and stuff. And this one just sticks out to me like, oh my God, like what are we doing here with Harry?
One of the biggest problems with this episode is that it really emasculates Harry.
Yes.
Because he's 30 years old. Garrett Wong was 30 when this episode was, you know, filmed. And it's Janeway dressing him down over and over again for this love affair and really putting him in incredibly awkward positions. And he's whining and crying to Janeway about this. This, to me, feels like it should have been, like, maybe a The Game era TNG Wesley episode or something.
Right.
Like, the idea of, like, you know, a late teenager, early 20s guy going through this. Because, yeah, Harry's 30, and the woman who plays Tao was 35. And when we're introduced to her right off the bat, she seems rather worldly. You know,
sure.
She doesn't. This isn't like a naive kind of doe-eyed Romeo and Juliet story. She's definitely had some experience, and we know that Harry has too. Like, that's what makes it all so creepy and weird. And there's an exchange he has with Janeway that I just had to isolate.
Okay.
Where he says, "Have you ever been in love, Captain?"
"Yeah, pint."
"Did your skin ever flush when you were near another person? Did your stomach ever feel like someone hollowed it out with a knife when you were apart? Did your throat ever swell when you realized it was over? 7 of 9. 7 of 9 told me love's like a disease. Well, maybe it is. Pheromones, endorphins, chemicals in our blood, changing our responses, physical discomfort. But any way you look at it, it's still love."
And just moments earlier, he was literally on the bridge screaming at Janeway saying, "I don't want treatment."
I love that scene, actually.
That, to me, is one of the most awkward things I've ever seen in the world.
Yeah, so for me, this episode, it's bad in a fun way. Like, I actually kind of enjoy it. But it's the fact that this character of Harry Kim, it portrays him like a child. And I don't think it's appropriate for a 30-year-old man to be seen in these scenes, or, you know, much less the 35-year-old actress.
Yeah. Even just think about that. Okay. Recall the sickbay scene where the doctor's trying to figure out what's wrong with Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry's like, "Seven, could you excuse us?" "No."
Yeah.
"No, seriously, Seven, I need you to leave." "No." She won't leave. She finally does. And then the doctor's like, "Harry, what's up?" "Sex. We had sex."
Which is such an awkward delivery.
I was like, oh my God. Like, I need to ask Garrett Wong about this this episode. I just, like, he gets so very few, you know, episodes dedicated to him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, when he first opens up the page and, like, the script starts with him, like, getting busy with a woman, he's like, finally, they're giving me something to chomp down on.
Yeah.
And this is what they give him, where he looks completely emasculated. And
yeah.
It's just, it's so, I think it verges on, like, offensive. And if it was another character, like, say, Neelix, I want to say it's offensive, but I think because it's like that Asian, it's falling into this kind of Asian stereotype, which
right.
It just does not work at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. I do kind of like in this episode how, like, both Tom Paris and Chakotay kind of back him.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Well, okay, you know what? Let's get into this debate that Janeway was having about, like, Starfleet regulations.
Yeah.
You're on the other side of the galaxy. It's going to take you, at this point, I think they've shaved off maybe a decade or two. It's going to take you maybe 50 years to get home. And I understand where she's coming from and that Starfleet has regulations.
Do they?
But,
doesn't seem to stop Riker.
Well, I'm just saying. Yes, I know. What is, like, can she not be flexible at all or not understand that, like, look, Harry's very adamant. I'm in love.
Yeah.
You know, what? Why is this such a big deal to her that, like, she just, like, just tears him down. You have a formal reprimand on your record now. And just like, okay. Like, where do you come down on this argument?
I thought it was really ridiculous because she's going on about all these rules and regulations. I'm going, well, that's all well and good, but these didn't seem to apply in, like, any other episode I can think of.
No, I know. Sorry, Kirk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Kirk's 23rd. Maybe this is a 24th century thing.
Sure.
But we see Troy. We see Riker. We see all these characters have flings with Alien of the Weeks. And never once is there someone yelling at them, being like, you know, you didn't follow the Starfleet manual. And they said something about he didn't have, like, a medical clearance to do this. And it's like, like, was Riker in, like, going to Crusher all the time to get medical clearances?
Nurse Ogawa, good to see ya.
Can you sign this form for me?
Like, how?
Giggity, giggity.
Like, this is one of the things that bugs me about Star Trek, about, like, how stuck up it can be at times about sex.
Yeah.
And it's just like, really? And I'm just wondering, like, are the writers, okay, when the writers are writing this, do they actually believe any of this stuff that they're writing down there?
They can't.
They can't, right?
Yeah.
So then what really are they, what is their goal here?
I don't know. I think they want to make a sexy episode, but it's not really. It's just kind of awkward. But I will say, I am a fan of the hideously unsexy, sexy Harry Kim episodes because they lead to some great comic gold.
Well, you know, here's another one of my favorite lines. You had yours. I'll just give this. This is from Tal, where Harry feels really, really guilty about having sex with her. Is making love outlawed in your society? Yes. No! It's like, Harry, come on. Like, what is your problem, dude? Yes, you had sex. Like,
well, and the thing
it
is,
happens.
This female character, she's portrayed as very strong and confident.
Yeah.
What was the appeal in the first place?
Okay, here's the thing. One of the things that I have issue with a lot of these flings of the week is, like, the other character who's coming in just for this week, the guest star, has, like, zero personality. Mm-hmm. I like this actress.
Yeah, I thought she was good.
I thought the character was good. It was interesting because eventually you find out that they're involved with, like, this effort to break up this generational ship. Mm-hmm. There's an underground movement. She's part of it. I find her... I always ask... You know, what's the character's motivation? I totally understand her motivation throughout this. And she's also dealing with love with Harry. Kim, why? Why is she in love with Harry Kim?
That's the thing. I think this is why this episode doesn't work. One of the many reasons, but is the fact that they never sold me on that. Not so much that he wouldn't be attracted to her, but I never bought that she would be attracted to him.
Yeah. Maybe it's just that kind of...
Naive, innocent sort of thing?
Sure. I don't know. Like, look, xenophobic race. Maybe he's... I don't know. Just something... Different? I don't know.
I guess.
But
sure.
The way that they're... Okay, the way... after they slept together, Harry Kim was making it sound as if, like, that society has sex in a completely different way with very different sort of organs involved.
Right.
Like, I don't exactly know what he was trying to describe. It seemed very, like, almost Avatar-esque, you know, with, like... Yes, let's grip our tails together.
I don't know, because it just gave me flashbacks to, was it Favorites?
But when you lost your virginity?
Oh, wow. No, I was thinking of the episode Favorite Son, where he gets lured back to the sort of the planet of vampire women, essentially.
Yes.
But there's a part where the woman's like, come to bed, Harry. And he's like, do you want me to read you a bedtime story? And she's like, what is that? And he's like, well, it's when mothers and fathers sit down with their children and read it. And I'm just like, oh, my God.
Harry, you need to get some more Patrick Fabian vibes going.
Yeah, no kidding. Talk to Tom Paris. Get some tips.
Yes. Well, even Jane was just like, look, if Tom did it, I would have been like, whatever. But Harry, I'm so disappointed with you.
Oh, it's awful. It's just
this,
like,
episode, Cam.
It's like getting, like, oh, it's like being disciplined by your mother for, like, oh, it's awful.
Okay, Cam, we'll go to my number one pick.
Yeah.
This is, like, when we decided to do this one as a Valentine's Day inspired one, the first episode that came to me as a fling that does not work is one that you actually, I recall you were kind of indifferent about. You didn't realize it was such a bad episode. This is Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Meridian.
Oh,
this
okay,
is
yeah.
Where the crew of the Defiant encounters this planet that goes in and out of our dimension like once every 60 years.
Right.
Jadzia lands on a planet and somehow falls in love with this really lame dude played by Brett Cullen. Brett Cullen, an actor I like. You'll see him on Lost. He's in The Dark Knight Rises. But I have no idea what the appeal is here. We get a lot of other good lines like this. Ooh, are your spots decorative? She says, are yours?
Oh.
How far do they go down? All the way. I'm just like, that's flirtation. The relationship, I never see it evolve beyond just like really, really cheesy, lame, creepy flirtation.
Wait, isn't that normal?
Oh, okay.
I am fascinated to rewatch this episode because you're right. When I watched it, I didn't think it was a particularly great episode or anything. I just thought it was, you know, standard forgettable episode, move on to the next one. But this episode has a lot of hate against it, so I'm actually really curious to revisit it because I don't have these strong feelings of really either way about it.
Real okay, Cam, to me this is the worst of the worst when it comes to
today. Actually doing research, I actually did stumble across, I don't remember how, but people talking about this episode as one of the all-time worst romances. And so yeah, I do need to rewatch this episode.
Well, essentially, I mean, Jadzia decides that she's gonna leave Starfleet,
yeah,
and stay on this planet with this guy,
yeah,
and it seems like the rest of the crew doesn't care. They're like, Julian's like, oh, okay, and Sisko's like, I wish I could talk you out of it. No one gives a crap, and I'm just like, really, like it seems so bizarre. I mean, look, Cam, there's a scene like I think the height of the romance is when they both climb up into a tree, like Michael Jackson did in that Martin Bashir documentary, and they're in like this wishing tree, and I'm just like, what is this? This looks like something out of like a really bad 1970s film or something. And
right.
I just could not, I did not for a minute buy the relationship between these two.
That seems to be a very popular opinion.
Okay.
You are far from alone, I think, in that one.
Okay, but Cam, it's not that this episode features just this listless relationship as well, mm-hmm. where Jadzia essentially decides to throw away her life, you know, back home for this real nothing of a dude.
How does he compare in the terms of nothings next to like Shakar or Vedic Barile or some of the Troy boyfriends?
More personality than Kira's bows.
Okay.
Maybe a little more personality than, say, the dude from Masterpiece Society.
What, right.
Yeah.
What about the guy in The Price?
Oh, that one? You know, maybe I'll say this. I think I just like Brett Cullen as an actor.
Right.
Even though there's nothing on page for him, I think he at least brought a little life to it, but it was just creepy, bad dialogue. But
right, yeah, okay.
If this romance wasn't bad enough, this is also the one that featured Jeffrey Combs' introduction to the series, playing that alien who wanted to have sex with a holographic version of Kira and enlisted Quark to do so.
That's my other best romance.
Oh, God. Like, God.
That's a terrible... I mean, that part of the episode is really awful.
To me, that is just so awful.
So, I mean, yeah.
But...
Yeah.
There was a great line that I had completely forgotten about, or maybe I didn't even understand it when I was a kid, mm-hmm. but Jeffrey Combs' character comes out of the holosuite, and Quark says to him, "You're only in the holosuite for 10 minutes." And then Jeffrey Combs says, "No need for me to stay for the full hour." It just made me think back to, you know, okay, I don't want to... I don't want to kind of give it away, but there's going to be another great line that I share a little bit later on in this episode. But it made me think of that, so I'll come back to that a little
later. Okay, well, let's get to something actually good. You know, we talked just now about a Jadzia Dax romance that doesn't work. Let's talk about one that does. And that is from the episode Rejoined. Now, this is the episode where Dax is reintroduced to her former wife.
Oh, I thought you were using this as an example that doesn't work.
Oh, no, that does.
I was
does.
Like, what? Really?
No, no.
Like, this is like
we're
a fan favorite.
We're back to good here.
Okay. I'm sorry. My apologies. I was like, wow.
Yeah, so she comes across Dr. Lenara Khan, played by Susanna Thompson, who is the wife of her previous host, Tarius. I love this episode. I think this is one. This is like up there to me with like an Edith Keeler type of episode.
Wow,
I think this is really, and Lessons too.
Yeah.
Of one of the great romantic episodes. And what I love about it is that they play it completely straight. There's no winking or like, look at this, two beautiful women making out.
You used a bad pun just a second ago.
Did I?
They played it completely straight.
Oh, wow. Well, then, apparently I did. But, you know, what I loved most about this episode is how completely normal it's treated. There is a moment early on where, you know, we find out that Trills are not allowed to essentially reconnect once they're in, you know, new hosts and living new lives. But Kira says, you know, like she's talking to, I think, is it Quark maybe at that point? I can't actually remember. But she says, like, oh, why don't they just get back together? Like, to Kira, there's no like, well, now that there's, you know, there are two women, that would be awkward. You know, it's completely off the table. She's like, I don't understand. This is your great love. Why aren't they back together? And, you know, again, later, Sisko's talking to Dax, and he's against it. You know, he's saying, like, look, you're going to be kicked out of Trill Society. You know, your symbiote will not go on to another host, et cetera, et cetera. But then he says, but no matter what you choose, I will back you. And so it's very much like people siding with, you know, Jadzia wanting her to be happy.
And, I mean, I keep going back to one of the first episodes to really touch upon, like, homosexuality, like, head on, which was The Host. In which, essentially, you have, it was actually the introductions to the Trills, and they actually looked much different, and essentially Crusher and Riker, who mm-hmm. is hosting the Trill Symbian at the point, they engage in a relationship, and she's just head over heels in love. The previous host was a male,
mm-hmm.
then goes to Riker, and then as soon as it's put in a woman, Crusher's like, no, can't do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, this was Rejoined was handled so much better, I think, than
it's
The Host.
It's directed
was.
By Avery Brooks, and it's just beautiful handling of this material.
Better than his directorial debut in Fascination?
Just a little.
Okay.
But just the scenes where, you know, her, where Jadzia and Lenara are together, like, you can feel the tension. Like, these two actresses do a great, great job. And Terry Farrell, both her and Sidi Galfedel, they struggled in season one. Like,
yes.
You could tell that they were maybe, at least at that point, a little bit out of their depth compared to some of the more seasoned actors they were with. But you can see at this point, like, Terry Farrell is at the top of her game.
I mean, DS9 was her first acting gig.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, this was season three, if I recall correctly?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so by then...
season four.
Season four, okay. So by then she had 3.5 years to... she was, look, under the tutelage of some pretty dang good actors at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm very impressed with her. Here's the thing I keep going back to when it comes to these flings of the week. Do I buy them as a legitimate couple?
Yeah.
I totally do here.
And this is haunting. Like Edith Keeler, like it's haunting at the end when, you know, Lenara leaves and goes out, you know, the door and you just see like Dax looking down on her from up above.
Do you think Susanna Thompson, maybe one of the... underrated Star Trek actresses.
I think so, because I just don't think people make the connection that she played both this and also the Borg Queen.
Yeah.
Because of all the prosthetics and stuff like that.
Like the second Borg Queen after Alex Kriga.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, she definitely underutilized. I think they could have done a lot more with her. But yeah, like props to her for like making you invested in this person's fate as well, as opposed to only being concerned about Jadzia.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like you really feel for both sides. It's funny, though, you know, this episode, very controversial when it aired. Renee Echevarria, who co-wrote it with Ron Moore, said, "My mother was absolutely scandalized by the episode, shocked and dismayed. She told me, 'I can't believe you did that. There should have been a parental guidance warning.'"
Really?
And then also, Ira Stephen Bear commented, "I know that Paramount got a lot of negative feedback, which only goes to prove a point I always believed in, which is that science fiction fans and Star Trek fans are much more conservative than people want to believe, and the whole Gene Roddenberry liberal humanistic vision is truly not shared by a significant portion of them."
I absolutely... Okay, Cam, after getting on some of these Facebook groups,
yeah,
I absolutely agree. And I'm shocked by a lot of... especially a lot of the homophobic and racist stuff that I still see on these Facebook groups.
Especially kind of going around the Anthony Rapp casting and Discovery.
The Anthony Rapp casting, as well as the revelation that Sulu was going to be revealed as a gay character in the J.J. Abrams reboot universe. And it's just like, I'm like, are these people just watching Star Trek because they like battle scenes? Or like, why are they watching the series that is so clearly like a very liberal progressive series? And it doesn't, to me, it's not like Star Trek was hiding itself as a liberal series at all.
No.
I'm just like dumbfounded. Like there's all these like super conservative fans. I think that quote from ISB, that's what I call Ira Stephen Bear.
Of course.
I think that ISB quote totally hits the nail on the head.
I love Ira Stephen Bear.
Yeah,
like
I know.
This guy says all the things like I like hearing.
Cam, for listeners who don't know, you and I, we got a photo with him. Have we posted that photo on our blog?
Yeah, it was for the Vegas 2016 wrap-up episode.
Okay, take a look at the Vegas 2016 wrap-up episode. I'm wearing a fantastic hat. Oh, no, that's with the Chase Masterson photo.
You are wearing the hat in both.
Oh, in both. Okay, yeah. Listeners, I've got the most fantastic hat you could ever imagine, Deep Space Nine related. So.
Yes.
You know, Cam, can we digress just a little bit if we're on the topic of ISB?
Sure.
Okay, so you get in line. I thank you so much. I wanted to hang around the vendor's room. You're in line for, what, an hour to get that autograph photo?
Quite a while, yeah.
Yeah, so you end up going and asking him a question on my behalf, and you're like, hey, my friend, he's really hoping for those Deep Space Nine Blu-rays one of these days. What does he say to you, Cam?
He says, like, tell your friend to not give up hope.
Cam, should I give up hope
yes.
by this point?
Yes, you should.
Okay, for those who don't know, there was, I believe it was from TrekCorg.com.
I think it was, Trek News.
TrekNews.com, okay. Talking about, they really spelled out why it's prohibitively expensive to ever get HD versions of Voyager and Deep Space Nine. I finally had to give up, and I just buckled down and bought the DVD box sets, re-release of Deep Space Nine. Very cheap right now. Like, I paid about $113 Canadian, so that's about just under $100 US, so very happy with that purchase. But Ira Stephen Bear, ISB, I mean, I love you, man, but you gave me false hope for about 6 months, but I'm okay. I'm over it now.
Yeah, too bad.
Okay, so Cam, I'm going to go on to my next pick here. You just did a Voyager episode as one of your worst flings of the week.
Yeah.
I think one of the most successful flings of the week, period, is another Voyager episode. This is Counterpoint, featuring Janeway and the D'Vor Imperium Inspector.
Yeah.
This, of course, they're going through a very, very vast space boundary where, you know, telepaths are banned from going through. And so they have to hide all these telepaths, including their own, you know, such as a Tuvok or a one of my favorites, Vorik,
right,
aboard the ship, as well as these other refugees. It's very, it's Voyager's Schindler List episode, is it not, Cam?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then you have this defector come aboard, the inspector who's been checking out their ship to make sure that they never have any of these refugees on. He defects to Voyager, and they work together to find a way to save all these refugees and get them to safety. And it is a legit relationship. By the end, he has to go back, and he's telling her he's going to throw them off their trail, and they mac out. And I buy them as a couple. But this episode, I think, Cam, you and I, one of our complaints is that Star Trek, at least Next Generation, the Berman era of Star Trek, visually, musically, it's not as engaging as it could be at times.
Right, yeah.
You know, this one, you're blasting. I mean, this is why this is such a Schindler's List, like, kind of knockoff, or homage, I should say. But you're blasting, like, classical music. You've got very Nazi-esque Devor Imperium foot soldiers going around.
Right.
Look, you're attacking, or you're hunting down, like, people that are just different from you.
Right.
You know, do you buy Janeway and the inspector as a couple here?
I do, and I'll tell you why. It's because Janeway is incredibly smart, and so is he.
Yes.
It's finally, like, Janeway has finally met her match, essentially. And so you can understand why there would be sparks and tension, and it's never consummated, which is kind of the beauty of the whole relationship, is that you can see that these two people in, well, maybe a different world would be together.
By consummated, you just mean, like, sex?
Yeah.
Okay, because they do make out with each other.
Sure.
Sure, okay. Yeah. Or that's making out. Is that what you call third base, Cam?
I don't really know bases anymore.
Oh, okay.
The bases seem to shift with every generation. I don't know what it is anymore.
I'd hate to think what, like, kids born in, like, the early 2000s considered to be first base.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
disturbing, I'm sure.
Exactly. But, yeah, so, like, this relationship feels playful. It's fun. You can understand why Janeway would be engaged by it.
Yeah.
You know, you compare this to, like, her relationship with Michael Sullivan.
Oh, dear.
And it's just like, this is what Janeway is really looking for.
Oh,
this,
yeah,
type of guy.
And, you know, I do like the fact that, okay, they're both playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both, you know, Janeway, she says at the end, like, look, this could have worked. Like,
right.
I was totally willing, but she did have her guard up throughout it. So I bought them. I'm confident this is not just a big, long con on her part.
Right.
She was legitimately invested in a relationship in this guy, but she had her guard up just in case, and which I think this proves why Janeway is so smart.
Yes. Do you think this would have been a sustainable relationship?
What would he have done on the ship? We have regulations.
Yeah.
You cannot join Starfleet. You can help Neelix in the mess hall.
He can be the cameraman for briefings with Neelix.
Oh, God. He could do everything for the Doctor as well with his,
sure,
holographic camera.
Yeah.
Or he could take over Kes's botany lab. That
too, yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, so much of the relationship is about kind of one-upsmanship and,
yeah,
kind of playing games, and essentially, I don't know that if they were actually, like, living together, you know, like, what, are you going to be home for dinner? I don't know that, like, they. I feel like this relationship is fueled by excitement.
Okay, I buy that.
I,
yeah,
would be curious how they would transition into the mundane.
He could turn into a Chakotay fairly soon.
Well, you know, she did kind of have the thing for Chakotay at certain points in the series. Maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah. Didn't everyone at a certain point?
I mean, including, see, the viewers.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay, so Cameron, I want to go to you next. What is a relationship that does not work?
That does not work. I want to talk about an original series episode called Requiem for Methuselah. I've referenced this one before on the show. This is an episode where Kirk and the crew, they go down to this planet, and there's this kind of older guy named Flint. He is basically an immortal being who was also Da Vinci and a few other famous historical figures. And he has built an android woman. And this android woman, not so much into Flint, but she is into Kirk. And it's all part of Flint's scheme, is, you know, he's very attracted to his robot woman. And so his hope is that, you know, this young, hot-blooded Kirk will kind of turn her gears, essentially, and then leave. And then Flint will benefit, I guess. But ultimately, it causes a love triangle, and It's really uncomfortable. It's like it basically devolves into the two men punching each other in the face and like Kirk pleading with Raina. Raina's the name of the
Android woman. Didn't that happen to you and I in J school?
More times than I can count. Yeah. But it basically ends with Kirk like pleading with this woman, like, choose me, choose me.
Yeah.
And she ends up dying because she can't make the choice. She's so conflicted. And it cuts to like Kirk, just a complete basket case. And Spock has to go in and basically mind wipe him and say, you know, forget, forget. Now,
okay, let me ask you this. Do you buy that Kirk would actually be torn up about this, the fate of...
I don't. And I'll tell you why. Because we've seen Kirk have tragic romances in the past. Edith Keeler, one I considered, strongly considered, was the episode The Paradise Syndrome, where Kirk marries basically an Aboriginal wife. And she ends up getting pregnant with his child and then dying from being stoned to death. And I really considered this episode real strongly because it's a bad episode. But ultimately, there's real emotion in this. And Shatner has actually some real... And so does the actress, Sabrina Scharf. They're really good playing opposite each other. And there's genuine emotion, especially in the final scene. So I couldn't hold... As much as I don't like the episode and, you know, the politics of it, the racial politics now are really outdated... But there's actual genuine emotion. You could tell the director was trying to sell the emotion and what this meant to Kirk. So while, yeah, it's a disposable romance of the week, ultimately, it's not referenced ever again. There's effort put into it. This one, it feels ridiculous. We've seen Edith Keeler and Miramani from Paradise Syndrome. Those should have shaken Kirk up big time. You know, Spock never had to come by and say, forget, forget, after those two. But, you know, this android woman he spends, like, maybe an hour, you know, a couple hours with, you know, like, ballroom dancing while Spock plays the piano. And then they also are having a sexy game of pool, like billiards.
That sounds like every first date I've ever gone on, Cam.
It's so, batshit weird, and you've got this old man hovering over them the whole time. Like, it's just uncomfortable. And the fact that this is what, like, basically almost has Kirk, like, finished.
Right.
Like, at this point, Spock should have been kicking him out of the command and taking over. He's such a basket case. And this is what they decided to have this breakdown over. Well, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, one of the other parameters that I'm looking at when it comes to these flings that don't work is whether it's a betrayal of the character. And
yeah.
You don't really buy Kirk, you know, being unable to command the ship just because of this one woman here.
And pleading and begging for her to love him. It's just... It's so not Kirk.
Okay.
I mean, you can tell it's a season three episode.
Cam, look, if I'm keeping it on the thread of bad episodes here, one that jumped out to my mind instantly, you alluded to it just a moment ago, but Fairhaven, featuring the one, the only Michael Sullivan,
right.
The Irish hologram from the late 19th century that Janeway spends a night talking to, he's a barkeep of the Irish town.
Yeah.
Then she finds out the next morning that his programming dictates that he's married. So she rewrites the program to get a little oven. Here's the thing. I totally understand what they're trying to do with this in that, like, yes, Janeway, she's got her needs. And Chakotay does have a pretty good explanation to her. Like, they're just lights and photons. Don't worry about the holograms. And I buy that. Do you ever buy them as a couple? Because again, to me, it's that issue of like the futuristic person going with the simple person. And, you know, I'm just like, I'm not invested at all in their relationship.
I mean, I buy the idea that Janeway likes sort of simple pleasures, especially old timey, because we've seen she likes Jane Eyre.
All right, and don't forget Leonardo da Vinci.
Sure. Oh, God, concerning flight. God help me. But yeah, I mean... I buy the idea that she's into this sort of stuff. Although, even when we're referencing Leonardo da Vinci or Jane Eyre, this is sophisticated works of their period.
Yeah.
Michael Sullivan is not a sophisticated work of his period.
No, this is pre-Oscar Wilde sort of like, it's an Irish town, you better like it.
Yeah,
you
like
know?
It's very toothless, generic, and so is he.
I know, I don't know. There's the fact that we had to come back to this town a second time for Spirit Folk.
Yeah.
And they don't really pick up on that Janeway Michael Sullivan thread at all. I'm just like, it really is just a fling of the week then.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, they never bring him back because I wanted to actually include originally the episode where the doctor falls in love with the Vidian woman.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But then she does pop up briefly later on over a, you know, view screen talking to him. So I cut it because of that reason. But yeah, Michael Sullivan, we never get anything, even like a glimmer really of.
Yeah, was that Life Signs, the Vidian episode?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that was a good, strong
really,
one.
Really good episode, yeah.
I don't remember her popping up.
She does later in another episode. Yeah, just on a view screen to give some explanation, but she does briefly address the Doctor, so I was like, I'll cut it for that reason.
Okay. Well, Fling of the Week, Michael Sullivan, you don't work for me,
well,
sir.
Well, yeah, it's just, what would Janeway be engaged by talking to him?
How are your... how's Maggie the cow doing? Yeah, that's a reference to the episode, guys.
Because the thing is, Janeway is a lot like Picard. She's very cerebral, sophisticated. I would think, like, for Janeway, a really strong romance is going to have a certain gift of the gab.
Does this give you kind of, I don't know, vibes of, like, Riker and Minuet again?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like...
But you buy it with Riker, you don't buy it with Janeway as much.
Okay.
Riker, oh, well... You know, he's maybe not the choosiest.
No, he's not, Cameron. Okay, well, what's your final pick for a fling that works for you?
Well, originally it was going to be Lessons, but you took that. So my
sorry, man.
My alternate is This Side of Paradise from the original series. This is the episode where much of the crew are infected by these spores on this planet and basically become kind of like, you know, stoned, essentially. But what is great about the romance in this episode is it's a Spock romance, which we got very few of. And if we did, it was usually a woman kind of throwing herself at Spock while he was icy.
I've been there before, man. It's tough.
Represent.
Yeah.
But in this episode, you know, Spock meets this old love of his named Layla. And because of the spores, he loses his, you know, Vulcan cold logic. And so we get to see Spock embracing his human side in love. And Layla's played by Jill Ireland. I don't know that I would say Layla is necessarily the greatest creation of, you know, Star Trek love interests.
Okay.
But it's what the episode tells us about Spock, is the idea to see Spock, you know, swept up in love. And how strongly, you know, Jill Ireland and Leonard Nimoy sell this. And sort of the tragic... nature of this relationship, and that ultimately it's not going to last. And when they're saying kind of goodbye to each other, she's really saying goodbye to what the, you know, the man she could have loved.
Okay, so I'm all for episodes that reveal more about the characters here.
Yeah.
Do you buy maybe the chemistry between Leonard Nimoy and Ms. Ireland?
I do, for sure. Yeah. Okay. I think they really blend well together. I think the issue is that the character of Layla isn't as maybe dynamic as some of the other love interests we've talked about. It's very much focused more on Spock. But what it tells us about Spock is what makes the relationship, I think, work so much stronger, is that we get the sense, it's really a window into what Spock could be like if he embraced his human side. And it was an episode written by DC Fontana. It was originally actually, interestingly, going to be a Sulu romance episode. And DC Fontana was like, no, this is a Spock episode through and through, because with the spores, you have the ability to remove the cold exterior of Spock, right?
I totally buy that explanation, but it's one more example of the emasculated Asian male character.
For sure, and I'm sure George Takei wasn't thrilled, you know, when they were like, no, yeah. It's going to be a Spock episode.
Sorry, bro.
But it is, I think, one of the earliest great Spock episodes, like genuinely great character study Spock episodes. And it's a relationship that's, I think, the best romance he has in the original series.
Okay. My last pick for flings that work, for me anyway... this is going to The Perfect Mate. This, of course, is featuring Famke Janssen as a kind of gift to an ambassador. She has been designed to be the perfect mate for whoever she encounters. She is, quote-unquote, hatched prematurely, and she encounters Picard. And boy, it's to me, I love this episode because, as you were just saying before, it reveals... a lot that you didn't really expect from the characters. I remember first time I watched this, I really like did not care for the romance episodes as well. This
right.
feels like watching it, age 32 now, feels like I'm watching a very adult program. Like they're taking like...
Oh, really?
Well, not in that way, sir. No, it feels like Star Trek's being mature about like these relationships. Essentially, like, every dude that encounters this woman is incredibly attracted to her because like she has this ability to like really reflect what they want in
right.
somebody. So there's a great line where you know she has a big long chat with one Commander Riker, and he finally leaves her quarters, and he calls a bridge. Is like, "Bridge, if you need me, I'll be on holodeck 3," and then he rushes off.
Right.
So that was the quote I was referencing to back when we were discussing Meridian. This is why this episode I find fascinating. They decide they can't leave her isolated in her quarters, no matter all the commotion she's creating among the men. A little bit of victim blaming for you as well. It doesn't age so well. But
right.
So essentially, Picard goes in and he's like, look, I'm me. I can handle it. And he goes and he has like these big, long conversations with her. Has to like teach her like these rituals because the guy who's supposed to do that, he's out of the picture. The Ferengis essentially put him into a coma.
Of course.
Old man, you know.
With a laser whip?
Oh, yeah. It happens time to time. This is what's fascinating to me. Old man awakes from the coma. He's just like, oh, Captain, thank you so much for doing all this for her. I know that they gifted, you know, or they put me in charge of her because I'm an old man and I can absolutely resist her charms. How did you do it, Captain? Patrick Stewart, like the stone cold look on his face where he like you can read so much into it. And the writers are being purposely vague about what may or may not have happened between the two characters.
Right.
I took away from like Picard was not able to resist her charms, no matter how much that violated the regulations, essentially. And it violated essentially like this peace treaty that they're going to do because she was supposed to consummate the relationship with this ambassador and that was supposed to bring about this peace treaty. She's going to be miserable forever after because she was supposed to be the perfect mate for whoever she consummates with first. She does that with Picard. She has a lifetime of torture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all what I'm taking away from the episode. They don't spell it out, but, well, I think they do spell it out, but they don't say it explicitly. Picard does the deed with her, and you could see he's very, very tortured about having done so. Cam, what was your reaction to this episode when we watched it a couple years ago?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought Famke Janssen is really good in
yeah.
this. Was this like our first role?
It's I believe it was. Because I think she was like maybe 24?
Yeah, because like GoldenEye hits in 95, and that blows her up. And she's fantastic in that. But yeah, I really liked the character of Kamala. Like I thought she was very compelling. And this episode... You know that I'm one of my greatest guilty pleasures in Trekdom is the episode Bound.
Oh, yeah, it is.
This is sort of the adult take, like an adult storytelling version of Bound.
I agree.
We see more of like the ramifications of having, you know, someone like this, essentially a sex slave, and what it can, you know, the complications that can arise from this, how the characters are impacted by having someone like this on the ship. You know, Bound plays it for kind of cheeky, you know, laughs and that sort of thing and winking sexiness or whatever you want to call it. But The Perfect Mate, I think because it's Picard dealing with it, the heaviness of it is much more present and there's much more of a contemplative attitude taken towards it.
They definitely handle it with more maturity. I'm totally stuck over Patrick Stewart's performance. That last scene with him just gave like this dead look in his eyes where... Yeah. I can understand some people interpreting it as Picard just thinking like, hey, I have a lot of integrity. There's no way. He totally slept with her. You know,
right.
I think that's what Patrick Stewart's going for in his performance. I think that's what the writers were really hinting at there. And to me, it really makes you rethink. As much as we think of them as these superhero kind of characters,
mm-hmm.
they are flawed individuals ultimately.
Yeah, and we feel the weight of it on Picard when it ends. You know, like we wouldn't have if it had been like Archer or Kirk.
No.
Maybe Sisko. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But definitely not Archer, though.
No.
Okay. Cam, your last pick for a fling that doesn't work for you.
So let's talk about a Deep Space Nine episode called The Muse.
Oh, dear.
This is the episode where Jake Sisko is sort of drawn into the Black Widow-like clutches of a attractive older woman that stimulates his creativity.
And more.
And more. This episode is bananas.
Bananas bad.
Yeah. It's a terrible, terrible episode. But you can tell they're trying to really kind of make it salacious. It's this like teenage boy with this experienced older woman. And he's essentially breaking down throughout the episode. And she's helping him write his book, Anselm.
Right.
And
which we know he completes based on The Visitor.
Yeah. My favorite thing about this episode might be a quote from Ron Moore.
Okay. Ron Moore quotes are always awesome, though.
He said, "The notion of this exotic, beautiful older woman who comes to you and gets excited by watching you write is like the most ridiculous idea. Only a writer would come up with that. Think of it. You're sitting there writing and she's just entranced. We watched that scene in Dailies and we thought, are we insane? What are we doing? How did we get here?
That is amazing. Cam, this is a bad episode, and that, like, you never once buy them as a legitimate couple, do you? Essentially, she is like this alien.
She is predatory.
She's this alien predator, you know, but yeah. I never, why would, is Jake into her just because he's so young at the time and he just doesn't know?
You obviously don't remember being a teenager.
Well, no, I'm just wondering, like, yeah, is it just that? Just like,
I think
a
so.
Woman's interested in
yes.
him, so he's interested?
I think
it?
So.
Okay.
Yeah. An older woman.
Yeah.
Played by Meg Foster.
Okay, she's been other
quite a few things, yeah.
Star Trek roles as well, I think.
I think I don't know about Star Trek, but she's had a fairly busy career.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this one doesn't work for me.
It's awful.
No, it's like okay. When I get to my after ISB convinced me to buy that DVD box set, you know, I will not skip this one. I will watch it through. It's been almost 20 years since I watched it, though. That's how bad it is.
And getting back to why it's bad. Look, the premise is ridiculous, but what does it tell us about Jake Sisko?
That he's a young man who falls for beautiful women?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's shocking.
That's the thing. It's, you know, it's idiotic in that respect. It just doesn't tell us anything about the character. It's just, the entire thing is there to just kind of be a quote-unquote sexy episode, and it fails miserably.
No, you don't find it sexy, Cam?
Not that I'll admit on the podcast.
Okay, well, one episode I don't find sexy at all. Mm. My final fling here, Aquiel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Geordi LaForge shows up on a space station that's been abandoned. He starts looking at the logs and falls in love with one of the ensigns who took off. Turns out she's alive and she's brought back and she's. A real crappy Starfleet officer. Cam.
Really bad.
Like, really
like
bad.
A bumbling fool.
Yeah. What's worse, though, is as bad as she is as a Starfleet officer, Geordi's like, you can have a position on this ship. Like, I'll transfer you over here. I'll give you a recommendation. You want a recommendation? I'll give you a recommendation to another ship. Yeah, I can get you promoted. And it's just like, oh, Geordi, what are you doing, sir?
Who do you think is more awkward to watch in these sort of love scenes, him or Garrett Wong in, like, The Disease?
That's a tough one, but I think you got to give it to Geordi.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing
he's
worse.
He's the OG.
There's nothing. He's the O Geordi.
Yeah.
Because that's what I say whenever I watch him. I'm like, oh, Geordi. It's just, there's nothing more awkward than watching him interact with, say, a Leah Brahms or an Aquiel. You know, that they're quote unquote sex scenes where they've got the sex crystal that they're both holding onto, and Riker comes and finds them doing it. And, like, just the look on Geordi's face, he's like, oh my God. It's just like, this is such a bad episode. It diminishes Geordi. It also shows that, you know, you can have really crappy Starfleet officers, and there you go. But I do buy them as a couple for an instant.
Yeah, I mean, Aquiel, she is, oh boy, is she damaged goods.
Yeah.
Like, run if you see an Aquiel in your life. But, I mean, that was always my issue with the episode, is like, I could never... What makes a lot of these episodes we talked about work is that we want to see these couples together. I never wanted to see Geordi and Aquiel together.
God, no.
I was like, Geordi, just no, don't do it.
To me, first of all, it had that issue with him knowing all this information about her because he thought she was dead and he was trying to find out what happened to the space station. And so he has like this kind of, he's got a leg up on her when it comes to like this relationship. And it's just creepy from there. I don't know. Do you think Aquiel is really all that interested in Geordi? Like, what do they have in common? Like, what do they connect?
I think she would drop him like a, you know, hot rock in no time.
I don't know. I don't buy this. Okay, so Cam, why don't we recap just for listeners? Like, you go through your three top ones. I'll go through my three top. Then we'll each do our bottom
three. Okay, so my top three were City on the Edge of Forever, Rejoined, and This Side of Paradise.
My top three were Lessons, Counterpoint, Perfect Mate. What are your bottom three, Cam?
My bottom three were Requiem for Methuselah, The Disease, and The Muse. And I did have, just as an alternate, which I'll throw out the name, Unexpected, the episode where Trip gets pregnant.
Oh, that, you know, that's actually a good one. I can't believe I did not have that on my list.
The romance is very, very brief. Yeah. And really, you know, it only lasts like, the first 20 minutes of the episode or something. When he's impregnated by a Zerillian woman named Alen by using sex crystals, which reminded me a lot of actually Demolition Man. You remember the part where they put on like the domes on their heads?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's a really bad episode, but the romance, you know, that you can tell they're doing that kind of like sexy alien love thing early on.
No, but what we learned though is non-consensual impregnation is hilarious.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm not even offended on a moral level. I'm just offended in the sense it's never funny. Like, it's kind of like Profit and Lace. Yeah. Like, it's offensive because the comedy never works.
By definition, it's built on an unfunny premise.
Right.
That they're playing for laughs.
Had they pulled it off, I probably wouldn't, you know, be that, I wouldn't think that ill of it.
Yeah.
But the fact that the comedy doesn't work, we're stuck with a premise that just goes nowhere.
Well, you know what, Cam? Between this one, Aquial, you and I, if we ever start a band, we need to call it Sex Crystals.
Yeah. You heard it here first, folks.
Okay. Well, my bottom three picks, Meridian, Fairhaven, Aquiel.
Right.
All right, sir. Cam, you and I were very forward-thinking podcast hosts. So way back in Las Vegas, we had no idea what we do for our Valentine's Day episode. So we actually asked some of our friends from around the convention to tell us about their first Star Trek crushes. So we've got a whole bunch of people. We introduce them all. So just listen up. Great, great, intriguing responses from everybody involved.
Right, yeah. This was a lot of fun to record. Turns out it couldn't support a whole episode, which is why it's, you know, kind of a, this is a, you know, bonus feature
bonus
on
feature.
This episode.
Yeah.
But I think it's a lot of fun, and we definitely had some laughs recording it.
Incoming transmission.
Hey guys, before we play these awesome, awesome clips, I just wanted to give you a bit of a heads up that they were recorded at a time, a simpler time for subspace transmissions, before the days of the amazing new equipment that makes us sound oh so crystal clear and stellar. There's a little bit of static that kicks in partway through. Nothing too egregious, nothing that's going to make you throw down your iPhone in fury. Fury like Kes in the episode Fury. At least I hope you don't, but if you choose to, please don't send us a bill. Actually, scratch that. Send the bill to Tyler. I promise you he'll pay. He'll double it. Yeah. So regardless, enjoy them, and just know that the days of the static, long behind us. Thanks.
So, Stefan Estanilo, we have you back on the podcast once again. Tell us who your first or biggest Star Trek crush is.
Actually, I'll start with accusations and then reality.
Okay.
So, I was a big Voyager fan, so my sisters would occasionally accuse me of being in love with Jerry Ryan, Seven of Nine. Not true. I just liked her as a character. Reality, I honestly, truly did not have a Star Trek crush. If I had to pull something out of, you know, the back of my mind, if I had to pick something, I really didn't have anything, but I suppose I would pick maybe Ensign Tabor from all two of his episodes of Voyager. Do we know who this is?
No.
Does anybody in here know who this is? No. All right.
Talk a bit about Tabor.
All right, so...
Tabor TV.
Do you remember... Okay, so there was the episode of Voyager where the Doctor was consulting a holodeck program of a Cardassian doctor.
Yes.
Who had slaughtered a bunch of Bajorans.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bengali-esque.
Yes.
Go on. I'm sorry.
there was a Bajoran ensign on the ship. I think it was originally a Maquis, who had a problem with the doctor consulting with this this Cardassian doctor. And he had a scene or two maybe protesting the doctor consulting with him.
Okay.
If I had to pick one, I'd pick
that. What jumped out to you as... a crush-worthy quality.
Honestly, I don't know. Maybe he's got this sort of like dark intensity, kind of the way you're looking at me right now. dark intensity
in Star Trek crushes, not podcast crushes.
But that's if I had to pick somebody,
right?
I suppose
somebody who you find cute. Who do you find?
Well, that would be it.
Tabor.
I mean, that's what
that's
I'm
it.
Landing
that's
on.
It.
Yeah.
Just Tabor. Okay.
Now, were you like bummed that this character never showed up again?
No, I didn't care. I didn't care. If something registered at somewhere, you know, in the depths of my black soul, I suppose that's where I would what I would pick.
Okay. Right. Interesting. Well, we also have with us is Scott Hardy. Scott, tell us a little bit about maybe your first or biggest Star Trek crush.
Mine's a wee bit easier. I think for me, around the time I started paying attention was around the episode Jadzia pulled out a swimsuit on Riser. And,
Scott became a man on that day.
That's when it happened, guys. That's when it happened.
Yeah. He didn't see that episode until he was 27.
It was last week, actually. But, Yeah, I mean, that was just sort of hello. Ding dong. And then from there on, ding dong.
What is it about Jadzia Dax, at least, that, you know, caught your eye?
Actually, no, it's more of her as a person. She's a very strong woman. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we're a strong woman. They don't want to push people over. So I'll be pushed over myself.
She can battle it out with the Klingons.
Exactly. So, she can hang in there.
Strong of mind, strong of strength.
And then, you know, since then, wow.
Needle in a pit full of needles.
That's how the sausage is made. And then since then, Riker leaning against the desk has raised a few questions for me as well. That's yeah, that's brought some stuff up I didn't think was there.
What about Cam's old photo with one Jonathan Frakes, in which Cam tries to do the Riker lean? Does that do anything for you, Scott?
I mean, you haven't seen my wall at home, so I'll leave that as that.
It's the wall of Cam.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, and James, huge Star Trek fan. I mean, so much
just
hours.
All of the Trek, just so much Trek. I mean, yeah, you know me. I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan, but right. I find myself.
And yet,
here.
You paid to be at a Star Trek convention on the 50th anniversary.
I am a bloody idiot. But no, I've recently gone back to watch Next Generation because I grew up with Next Generation. I was born in 1987. That's when it launched. So I was watching it back and tell you something, Gates McFadden. Hot damn, you know?
Now, did you pay for a photo op with her?
I did, and it went by quickly. I didn't say anything. I was just sort of, you know, when you're a bit stunned, because it was my first Vegas con.
I don't know what that's like.
so it was just weird seeing her. She still looks amazing today as well. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. But when you look back on those episodes and, you know, you see strong woman, good morals, would take care of you.
Bratty kid. Did you want to be a father to Wesley? That's my question.
That is the real reason. It was like, it's an avenue to get to the, to get to be Wesley's idol.
What just happened?
You figured me out, Cam. That's why I like you. You get me.
No, my question is, did you find Crusher more attractive in the show or the movies? Like, I saw it more in the movies than I did in the show.
I'll be honest, because I've seen the movies more than I've seen the show, but I still think the show, because she's a consistent character within the show, I felt like her character changed very much movie to movie. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't that consistency, and you know.
And like one movie she got two lines, and the next movie she got one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's half as many lines. I mean, yeah. I'm a numbers guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so looking back on it, yeah, Gates McFadden, I would say, is my biggest Star Trek crush.
Cool.
The Crusher. She's literally the Crusher. I'm on.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
And revealing your innermost secrets.
We're now here with Jesse Okendo, as well as Shelley Ross. Jesse, let's start with you. Who was your first Star Trek crush?
My first Star Trek crush was Riker, without the beard.
Okay. Now, is this Tom Riker or William T.?
William T. Riker.
Ah, okay, gotcha. Without the beard, I'm curious.
Without the beard.
What is it, sans beard, that does it for you?
He just looked worse.
with the beard?
With the beard.
Okay.
Now, were you
He's very youthful without... I like the youthful look. And we got the beard, he just became like an old man.
Interesting. Because, you know, Cam, we have a friend, one Katie Maximick. She loves Riker with a beard.
Oh, definitely.
I think that's what does it. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious, though. Now, Jesse, were you watching it when it first started on TV?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, like, you latched onto Riker at what age? Like,
when did it come out?
87.
You're really trying to age
yourself. Yeah, I'm really trying to put it, get it all out there. Yeah.
I was in high school in 87.
Okay. Interesting.
It's just, you like the baby face.
I love the baby face.
Okay.
Now, were you bummed when he grew the beard?
Yeah. What was your reaction?
Really?
What was your reaction? You're watching, season two? And you come back from summer hiatus, and he's got all this hair on his face.
I'm like, what the fuck's going on?
Wow.
I really did. I mean, I'm like, why did he do that? And, you know, you read, he said... you know, they were saying he needed to look older because he was, you know, didn't look commanding enough and all that stuff. And I'm like, but I wouldn't want to date him now.
So you get away from the beard. Mm-hmm. Let's say, who would take his spot?
Tom Paris.
Tom Paris. Interesting. Okay, why is that?
Because of the baby thing.
Oh, okay. Do you consider Tom Paris? This is a debate Cam and I had a few episodes ago. Would you consider him to be the bad boy of Star Trek Voyager?
He was, and then changed. And that's why, see, it's not just about looks. Like, for him, he was the bad boy, and then matured up and became responsible. And that's what I really admired about him.
Really? Interesting. Okay. Well, Shelley, I want to know, you told me I cannot take your pick. So tell me, who is your biggest Star Trek crush? Who's your first Star Trek crush? Let's start with that.
Seven.
Of?
Nine.
Oh, interesting.
That was your first?
It's the first that came to mind.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. So what is it about Seven of Nine that really gets...
Have you not seen her?
I have, yes. But describe for me, like, what are some of her attributes, both of her mind as...
It's when she was in the Borg outfit, isn't
it? She's gorgeous. Okay. She's gorgeous. She's a strong female. She takes emotion out of the equation, which I would love to be able to do.
We'd love if you'd be able to do that, too.
Takes no shit from anybody.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like, but here's the thing. Shelley, you've been a Star Trek fan for a long time, though. Are you telling me it took you all the way until 1998 or 1999 to
would
have
you just
your...
call her old?
No, not at all.
It's no secret.
Okay. You know, well, Shelley, I don't think you have a problem.
I'm 15 days older than Star Trek.
I was just going to say that. Like, yeah, we're here celebrating the 50th anniversary of Star Trek this week
and
in
me.
Las Vegas. And you.
Yes.
So it's really exciting to see, like, you grew up with Star Trek.
Yeah, I started watching when I was probably sophomore year of high school. They would run four episodes in a row of the original series.
Yeah,
and Shatner didn't
do
it
on Sunday afternoons. No, I don't remember thinking anybody from the original series was hot because I was laying on the couch with my boyfriend.
Oh,
I mean, he was hot.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So it took all the way until like the late 90s until you're like, oh, you know, that person kind of tickles my fancy.
She's amazing.
Okay.
And not even Riker, huh? Because I know a lot of women liked Riker.
No.
Yeah.
No. Not really. I mean, okay. I liked him, but I wasn't like. Damn.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right. It's interesting to me.
If I can't have her, I'm taking Julian Bashir.
Oh.
And I don't even...
They're that fascinating.
Yeah. Cam and I were talking about, like, who might like Julian Bashir. Tell me why that... What about season one, Julian, versus season seven, Julian? Did you waver at all, or...?
I don't even know a difference. I'm not the DS9 fan here.
Okay.
But he's hot.
Yeah?
He's dark and swarthy and hot.
There you go. But did he immediately strike you as, you know...
Yeah, the minute I saw him.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
Okay.
Now, I got so excited when he came on Game of Thrones.
Was it
the
accent?
Very exciting moment for me.
Yeah, you know what? He's actually aged quite well. He's got, like, kind of the
he
silver
looked really
fox
good by
thing.
The elevators, too.
Is he here this week?
No, that was, like, last
that
year.
That was last
year. Before.
Yeah. Okay.
But he's short.
You've never done, like, photo ops with... You're doing one with Jerry Ryan this weekend,
only
actually,
because
in
he's
Vegas.
Got one. But I'm not
right.
Unless I can come up with some.
Are you
going
to confess this to her?
I'm wearing my Resistance is Futile shirt.
Nice.
Okay.
Jerry Ryan, I paid full price for your photo op.
Sure. And you've never... would you do a photo op with Alexander Siddig? Or Siddig Al-Fidel?
No, if I had to pay for it.
Okay, but you did meet him, right? Like, you didn't...
I talked to him
you?
At the elevator.
Yeah, we chased him down to the elevator.
Kind of like Michael Westmore and me.
Right, yeah, that's
my
right.
My other crush.
I think, was it you? Maybe you pointed him out, and then I chased
him
down the hall?
I think so.
Yeah.
Cam, this isn't your first crush. This is... Shelley's. Okay.
Well, then.
All right. Well, that's Shelley Ross and Jesse Okendo. Guys, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you.
All right.
Guys, we're now here with Karen Netzband, as well as Kim McInnes.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks so much for coming on to talk about your first Star Trek crushes. Karen, tell me, who is your first Star Trek crush?
Well, my first one was Wesley Crusher.
Oh, interesting. Okay. How old were you when you first encountered one Wesley Crusher?
I'd say about 12 years old.
Okay. And what was it about him? What age was he approximately when you first took notice of him?
Probably just a few years older than that, I think.
Okay,
so
an older
person
man.
To my age, but okay. Yeah.
Was he in his academy uniform at that point? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. He wasn't in his season one sweater.
No.
Okay, I can buy that then. What is it about Wesley that, kind of caught your eye?
Well, at the time, I didn't really know a whole lot, and I was thinking, oh, he's cute. But looking back now, I don't really see it anymore. As an adult.
Okay, but what's interesting, because of course we're talking about first Star Trek crushes, so you just kind of thought he was cute.
Yeah, nothing really with his character, just his looks.
Like, not his intellect or anything.
No.
Not about how he saved the day every second episode.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. How do you think about, you know, Will Wheaton now?
I mean, he's all right now. I think that he's embraced his role really well. He knows how to make fun of himself. He's found his niche, kind of.
Okay, interesting, interesting. Kim, are we having a Wesley off here?
Oh, we are. Well, except I was like 11, but that's when it first started.
Ah,
he's the reason I started watching Next Gen to begin with.
Did he pull you into Star Trek? Or?
Yeah. He's the only, because I'd never seen the original series, and I caught it on TV one night, and I watched it every week from there on.
Okay.
So yes, in the sweater and the, like, don't get me wrong, but he is the reason I started watching it.
Now, had you seen, like, Stand By Me prior to this? Okay, yeah. So did he catch your eye during Stand By Me, or?
Well, kind of. Well, I started becoming the teen girl, so it was Corey Feldman, you know.
The Corys!
Yes, the Corys. Yeah. I was big into the Corys.
Did you go to License to Drive?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That was a good classic.
How was it, Camp?
I don't know. I've never seen it. I just remember the commercials.
River Phoenix. I mean, all of them. It was raging at that point.
Okay. Now, how much did, like, at that point, like, did you guys enjoy the Wesley character?
He was a bit whiny, but I was happy whenever he was on the show because I got to see him. Like, so the more he was on it, the happier I was.
Yeah,
and I did like him better in the Academy uniform, don't get me wrong. By then, it was good looking.
Too. I agree.
But yeah, as long as he was on there, I was happy.
If you had to pick one Star Trek crush, is he still at the top of your list of all time?
Yeah, because Wesley's such a...
I don't know if it's...
Know.
Yeah, well, it's because you guys now he's like... I still like Will Wheaton to this day.
Yeah.
You know, he's come to Calgary a few times. I've always got my photo op with him. but, I like the Enterprise guys. I'll admit, you know, Scott Bakula, Connor Trinneer.
That's interesting because you both, Karen and Kim, both said, you know, you found Wesley Crusher when you're like around 11, 12, you know, around that age, you know. But as you guys get older, I mean...
He stays the same age.
Well,
But I think, I don't know how the character, but if he was still, say, in a show, not saying I wouldn't still like him.
Right, right.
But I mean, when you're, you know, in your 30s, you're not crushing on the 15-year-old nerdy girl.
Well, that's what I was, that's what I was curious about.
But I was a, you know, 15-year-old nerdy girl, so... Yeah.
But like now you're more into like the Enterprise dudes? Yeah. And, okay. You know.
I'm a Bashir fan.
Because Cam and I were talking about possible Bashir crushes, and we didn't really think he'd be...
Named at all?
Named at all, yeah. And we've had twice so far in the episode. So what is it about one Julian Bashir that, you know, strikes you?
Well, I'm a sucker for accents. Mm. Also, he was very... At the beginning, he was kind of, like, nerdy, kind of shy, really awkward.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really nice to see him... evolve from that and to see a completely different character at the end. So I kind of felt like he was opening up to me.
Nice.
I think he was at his low point when it was the first Mirror Universe episode and he's meditating with Kira. And he's just so unbelievably annoying, making like honking noises as he's meditating. And it's just like... I honestly was not a big fan of Bashir myself, like when that character first started. I don't know. He came to be like... one of the more interesting characters by the end of the show. Like, I really dig his character arc. So it's interesting that we have not one, but two Bashir shoutouts throughout.
What I find interesting, too, is none of them are the obvious male choices. Like, you know, you often hear some of the new movie, like a Chris Pine or something like that, or Jonathan
like
Frakes,
him.
You do hear a lot.
Don't get me wrong, I like most of the guys in the movie.
Now,
TV show-wise.
Kim, I need to know, because you say the Enterprise guys.
Yeah.
Decon scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The first, we came here, and they had started talking, and somebody in the audience had been asking about all the shower scenes and all the underwear scenes, and I'm like, how have I not watched this show? So, in October, so I think like 2 months later, I was going to Star Trek London. So, between this convention in August and that convention in October, I watched all 4 seasons.
Oh, nice.
And by then, I was a big fan. And so I went to see their opening ceremonies at Star Trek London.
You know, if you get a photo op with them, you need to bring your own decon
gel. I have mine with Connor Trinneer. I've already got my photo op.
With Decon Gel?
No, no. You, but you I've need, already done need, one photo op. I only need one.
You need to bring with you, like, a barrel size, like, yeah, of Decon Gel.
And that's
just, like,
not going to look awkward at all. It's like, please be my friend.
I do have a question, though. You say the Enterprise guys. Where's Dominic King and all this?
No, yeah, it, okay, but oh, now okay. that I've met him at the convention side, it's, I'm good with him. I don't want a photo. I'm good.
Okay. Well, Karen, Kim, I want to thank you both so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, with us as well, sharing her first or biggest crush is Rianne Fox. Rianne, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast, Subspace Transmissions, here in Las Vegas. Tell me a little bit, who is maybe your first or biggest crush when it comes to Star Trek fandom?
It's Data.
Tell me why that is.
Because he's perfect. I mean, he'll rub your feet, he'll cook you meals, he'll clean your house. I don't know what that girl was thinking dumping him.
Are you talking about Jenna from In Theory, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me, when did you realize that Data would be, you know, kind of your big crush here?
Well, perhaps when he was fully functional.
So we're talking season one, TNG, it was that early on, right?
No, not really, because I was only like 12. I didn't know what that meant.
At 12 years old, you weren't wearing that Tasha Yar outfit or anything?
No, I didn't quite get that. I thought maybe they were going to, like, jump on the bed and have fun.
That was Cam's question, not mine.
Yeah. I knew I wanted to marry him at 12, though.
Oh, wow, okay.
Most definitely.
And was he ever surpassed by anyone else in the time since?
Maybe the new Kirk.
He, so, Chris Pine.
It's hard to go against Chris Pine. We all pine for Pine.
I agree. Okay, well then. Hey, Rianne Fox, thank you so much for joining us on Subspace Transmissions.
Oh, you're welcome.
Where can we find you on Twitter?
I don't really use Twitter.
Just double checking, because Cam got in a little trouble a few days ago with one James Chester, who's at Diet Pizza.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I do.
Thank you, everyone. So, Cam, tell me then, who was your first Star Trek crush?
I mean, there was definitely some very attractive guest stars in the original series, which I watched, like Sherry Jackson. I mean, it's impossible to not be wowed by Sherry Jackson.
Hey, I'm wearing her outfit right now.
I know. What are you doing Valentine's Day? but I would say the first Star Trek crush, and I know a lot of guys from when I was growing up were big, you know, Deanna Troi fans. I would hear that so much as a kid. But mine was Kira, I got to say, because yeah. I watched Deep Space Nine right after I watched the original series. And what I like about Kira is, yes, Nana Visitor is beautiful, but the character is so dynamic and interesting and feels so real and authentic that it was hard not to kind of fall in love with Kira over the course of the series.
Okay.
And I will say, Nana Visitor is the best smile in show business.
Okay.
And I've met her now a couple times.
Yes.
You know,
how are those photo ops going for you, Cam?
They're awful. Like, yeah. Everyone is more awkward than the last. And so it's kind of proof that it's best, the fantasy is sometimes best, you know, having the crush on the character than trying to have any sort of real life moment.
Maybe that's another convention photo you should upload for
Oh, listeners. No. There's that photo. So there's a little story. I think this photo will stay hidden in the dark forever. But yeah, I went to a con, the first one in Vegas, I think, and bought a photo op with an odd visitor. This was very exciting. And I ended up going in line and I had to skip like lunch or something because for some reason I didn't have time to eat that day. And I had a pounding migraine. So I had this photo taken with her where like I had that real bad pain behind one eye. So it's just brutal. And when you see that photo, you can tell that something's off. Like, she looks uncomfortable. I don't know what I'm doing. It's the worst photo of me I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
I mean, I've seen some real bad photos of you, Cam.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But, I mean, can you attest to that photo?
It's something to behold, listeners. I only wish Cam was brave enough to share it for the entire internet.
I can barely even look at it myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, $40 well spent.
Okay, sir.
Our friends got a kick out of it, though. So what about you?
Well, women are not objects, Cam. I would never have a first crush on any character.
Sure.
How dare you?
Right.
But if I did, honestly, like growing up, like all these actresses on like Next Gen DS9, they were all my mom's age.
Right.
So I never had any crushes on any of them. Honestly, yeah. The first one that I thought was cute was Nicole DeBoer. That's like, you have to go all the way to season 7 of DS9. So
yeah.
There you go.
Now, were you offended that, like, a lot of people did not like Ezri Dax, right? because they love Jadzia. So Ezri, there was a little bit of backlash. Were you running around defending, like, no, no, Ezri's the best?
You know, I didn't...
You weren't cognizant of that?
Well, no, because I was following all the message boards at the time, and I didn't really hear all this Ezri backlash going on, at least online. You know, I thought they were going in a different direction, and that character had an arc throughout the season. You could see her grow and develop. So I never had any issues with Ezri, so I never felt like I had to defend her either. But who knows? You know.
Yeah.
Okay, Cam. Well, that does it for our show today.
Yes. Well, have a happy Valentine's, everyone. I mean, I'm sure you'll just spend it listening to this episode on repeat.
Repeat, yeah.
And that would be the most magical Valentine's Day of all.
Well, this episode and the disease on repeat. Yeah.
Well, that's mine.
Okay. And a box of bonbons.
Okay. Like Troy would eat?
Yeah. You're a chuckleholic.
On that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Let us know what your best and worst Star Trek flings of the week are, or also who your first Star Trek crush was. Either one, we would be very interested to know.
Very.
Now, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
We are going to be examining the best and worst seasons of Star Trek. It'll be an interesting discussion. We framed it in a way that is, I think, a little different than what people might expect. But please tune in. It'll be a good one.
I got a whole lot of watching to do to figure this out.
You've got about 725 episodes to go.
I got no time for sleep.
All right, sir.
Okay. You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam. V is in Vash. Did not make my list. Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N. N as in Nausicaans need love, too.
So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.